The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
We'll talk to Professor Kingston Mills and Dr. Catherine Motherway in a moment. But first, Priscilla Lynch, clinical editor of the Medical Independent. There was an ENFIT briefing this afternoon, which seemed to be far more positive than many we've had from that body, particularly when it comes to the potential lifting of the remaining restrictions. Tell us about it, please.
Yeah, that's right. The Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Holohan, today acknowledged that obviously while we're still experiencing high numbers of COVID-19, relatively we had 1,400 new cases today, that things are stable somewhat, and that if we continue with the progress we're making with the vaccination programme in particular, that he doesn't think it would be too far off before we'll see further lifting of restrictions. Of course, he didn't want to pick any sort of date put any particular factors that would have to be met before we would lift restrictions further, but he was quite positive really, I suppose, compared to some of the more recent briefings that we've had. So I suppose that is a good thing to come from today's briefing.
Yeah, how much of that is now down to vaccinations and the potential for reaching what they call herd immunity?
Yeah, so I suppose we have over 70% of the adult population fully vaccinated now, and 85% are partially vaccinated. Again, we noted that vaccination has opened up to 16 and 17-year-olds, and also that they're giving the go-ahead for 12 to 15-year-olds to be offered the vaccines quite soon. So there's a lot of discussion about that today. So we're actually catching up quite significantly to the UK in terms of the overall population that are fully vaccinated. So we're still doing over 300,000 doses being administered of the vaccine every week, and we have increased access there to pharmacies. And also this weekend, we're starting with pop-up vaccination clinics for those who've not yet gotten the first dose of the vaccine, particularly targeting the young population, because we did hear today that the new COVID-19 cases are predominantly in people under the age of 40, particularly in the early 20s and in the teens as well, particularly 17 and 18-year-olds and 16-year-olds. So they're among the kind of the population that they want to particularly target.
But did they say anything at the press conference today as to how will those young people actually get? I mean, how likely is it somebody in their teens or early 20s will get so ill as to actually end up in hospital?
Well, Professor Karina Butler was speaking today. She's head of the National Immunisation Advisory Committee, and she was saying that, yes, generally children, particularly young people under the age of 16 and even younger again, that they generally have very mild course of COVID-19 illness. Oftentimes, very few symptoms, often it's asymptomatic, but a small percentage can be admitted to hospital, less than 1%, some of them seriously and some of them in ICU. There's also a risk of the inflammatory condition that is linked to COVID-19. So in children, that's that rare inflammatory condition, which is about 1 in 20,000 cases, roughly. The data is quite rough on that. She also mentioned for some children, they can take quite a while to recover. They can also experience long COVID. And she mentioned as well, for parents who are thinking of vaccinating their children, there's other aspects to consider as well. I suppose the anxiety in children who feel that they're not vaccinated and they're not allowed into places where adults are, that adults might be pulling away from them, that it can have a disruption on their education as well if they have to be out from school for a couple of weeks if they do contract COVID-19. So there's a lot of factors to consider. She said that for parents who are considering vaccinating 12 to 15-year-olds in their family, she would strongly recommend that those who are immunocompromised or those who live with other immunocompromised people, such as younger siblings or older parents perhaps, or grandparents, that they would strongly consider being vaccinated, and for other parents, they're supposed to take all factors into consideration.
But how are they going to encourage parents to give the vaccination to those aged between 12 and 17 who would probably need parental consent because they're not adults? If you have situations whereby, as I've been hearing anecdotally, you might have parents who were happy to get the vaccine themselves, but would be slightly more concerned about giving it to their children.
That's right. I suppose Professor Butler pointed out that the European Medicines Agency took its time looking at the data before it licensed the vaccines in these age groups. Currently just two vaccines are licensed in Europe. They're the messenger RNA vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer, and that the results of those trials were very positive, 100% efficacy, which was very welcome, and that they were generally that they were seen as very safe and effective. And she said that the risk of side effects was similar to adults. Generally, they were mild and transient, such as sore arms and perhaps tiredness, and the risk of very rare side effects, again, was very, very rare in the younger population. So she said it was something that parents would have to balance themselves and look at those particular factors. But again, they are very satisfied in recommending that all 12 to 15-year-olds can be offered the vaccine, and that in particular they want to strongly recommend that those who are immunocompromised, those who live with immunocompromised people as well, would get the vaccine. I suppose similarly with other decisions as well that they've made with other vaccines, again, like flu in similar year in previous years, the flu vaccine was introduced news last year that parents would weigh up those considerations when deciding to get their children vaccinated. But she said that, you know, overall that the data is quite positive so far, and that is a decision to be made, and it's not going to be mandatory.
Thank you very much, Priscilla Lynch, clinical editor of the Medical Independent. Dr. Catherine Motherway, intensive care consultant at University Hospital Limerick. How concerned are you about the potential, as the number of Delta variant cases grows, that these will eventually lead to much bigger numbers in intensive care units?
Well, there's no doubt, Matt, that there will be some increase in numbers, but obviously on this occasion we are hoping not to see anything like the surge that we had in January and February. And that there's still a link between hospitalizations and the numbers, but that link has been weakened, predominantly because of the very strong performance, as Priscilla has referred to, of the vaccination program. And if nothing else happens this evening, I would hope that everybody who's listening, particularly those who haven't had a vaccine, now know that they can go and get it. There's walk-in centres this weekend. They're published. You can go and get your mRNA vaccine at a walk-in centre at most of the vaccination centres. And the benefits of COVID vaccination are truly tremendous. We are seeing very few serious illnesses in patients who are fully vaccinated. So it is a very, very effective vaccine. And there is no doubt that the vaccination program has improved things. We will, as cases increase, we will see some people get sick. There is no doubt. There's still a link between the numbers and the hospitalization. But that link has been weakened somewhat. And we are hoping not to see a similar, I hope, surge as we did in January and February, when a vast majority of the population were not vaccinated.
The people who are ending up in intensive care units at present, what sort of ages are they, and are they the unvaccinated rather than the vaccinated?
Predominantly they are unvaccinated for various reasons, I'm assuming. To my knowledge, I got some information today before coming on tonight, 15% only are fully vaccinated. And not everybody who's fully vaccinated will necessarily get full benefit. So if you're immunocompromised or if you're in a much older age group, the vaccine, while it protects you immensely, doesn't bring your risk down to zero. So, I mean, there will be some patients who will be offered booster vaccines, obviously, later on this year, as you've already heard. So the vast majority of patients who are coming into us are unvaccinated, and they are thus far in the younger cohort. But the numbers, as you can see, are much less.
Yeah, but so are you getting children ending up in ICU, or teenagers?
I have had teenagers in the last surge in ICU, not many. And thus far, to my knowledge, I haven't got the exact age groups on this cohort, but we have... There will be the occasional teenager who will end up in ICU. That will be uncommon, and some of them may have underlying conditions and did on the occasions that I have seen them.
And are you better placed now to treat people with COVID? Have you learned a lot about the treatments and the medications, how best to do that?
We have. I mean, the best drug still is oxygen, and dexamethasone and other immune modulators are now being used. And we do know a lot more about it now than we did at the very beginning at 2020. It's still obviously a disease that I would recommend that you avoid getting, and you avoid getting that by either adhering to public health guidance or getting yourself vaccinated, and you very much diminish your risk. So I always believe the best way of avoiding getting sick from something is not getting it at all. And we do now have a tremendous vaccine available to us. And we certainly know how to treat people better in the ICUs, and we, you know, and in the hospitals, you know, the use of steroids has been very, very positive in terms of outcomes of people who get seriously ill.
Well, it's all very positive. Thank you very much, Dr. Catherine Motherway from University Hospital Limerick. Professor Kingston Mills from Trinity College Dublin is with us as well. Kingston, what do you make of the decision by the government to offer booster shots to the fully vaccinated older people and those who are medically vulnerable in early autumn?
Good afternoon, Matt. Yeah, I think for people who haven't responded well to the first two doses, that there is merit in boosting with a third dose. But I think for the general population, especially those that got the mRNA vaccines, there's no need for a booster. There's not much evidence that the antibody responses wanes that significantly over time in fully immune sufficient individuals that are healthy and normal. So I don't think, unless the vaccine is directed specifically at protecting against the Delta variant, but there's going to be a need to boost people that are healthy with a third dose in the autumn. I think the number one priority after all the adults are vaccinated are children. And obviously, then there are some immunocompromised who might be.
And sorry, just before I get you to the children, though, when you say if you have an mRNA, no bother, but would that suggest that those maybe in the first wave, older people and medically compromised who receive the AstraZeneca, would be in need of a shot of something else later this year?
Yeah, and that something else shouldn't be an adenovirus vector vaccine, in my view. We know that the booster effect of vectored vaccine is not as high as the booster effect of an mRNA, a whole virus, or a protein vaccine. This is because of this phenomenon of anti-vector immunity, and that gets even worse with a third shot. So giving a third shot of an AstraZeneca vaccine to somebody who's already had two is, in my view, a waste of resources using vaccines that could be better employed in other individuals. Even the AstraZeneca vaccine could be given to people who've had a Pfizer or Moderna as their first dose, because the mixing studies in the UK showed that mixing either direction, either with the adenovirus first followed by the mRNA or the mRNA for the adenovirus, is actually quite effective, as effective almost as giving two mRNA vaccines. So in my view, boosting a third time with an adenovirus vectored vaccine would not make sense. It's not backed up by the science, in my view.
Okay, what about the safety of the vaccines for teenagers and children? Because we are getting messages in from listeners such as this one. Will the vaccine affect teenage development and fertility in young women?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, young people are always concerned about vaccination. And if you remember back to the issues around the HPV, the human papillomavirus vaccine a few years ago, there was a lot of concern raised mainly around social media comments made about the vaccine. But that was quickly dispelled by people who'd suffered from cervical cancer. And it went on to, you know, the uptake of that vaccine went up very high, and it's preventing significant number of deaths of cervical cancer. That's a very good evidence that vaccines work, and it's the same with COVID. These vaccines really do work in children, but more effectively, in fact, in adolescents and young adults than they do in older people. And remember that the risks of getting COVID and are you know, significantly greater than the risks of the vaccine. And even in the younger children, even though the numbers that get serious disease are small, but they can get this multisystem inflammatory syndrome, which is quite serious, a small number, and some can get longer term symptoms called long COVID. So nobody wants that in their children. So I think, you know, obviously every parent and young adult has to weigh up the risks for themselves. But I think if they do, they'll probably find that the benefits certainly outweigh the risks. And I think we should be hopefully seeing a significant uptake in the adolescent population when vaccines are available.
And finally, Professor King-Smith, how important will that be towards achieving what is described as herd immunity, and why does that matter?
I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty about herd immunity and COVID, because we really don't know what the figure is going to be in terms of percentage. I mean, you have some commentators saying we've 70% of the population vaccinated with COVID-19 vaccines. That's incorrect. We've got 70% of the adult population vaccinated, which is a totally different thing. We need to have 70%. We need to have 85% probably of the entire population. And by the entire population, I mean all children and all adults, before we're going to reach herd immunity. And that has to be with a vaccine that has 90% efficacy, which means an mRNA vaccine. So by not mixing the AstraZeneca vaccines, back to the comment again, with the mRNA, you're leaving a cohort that will not have the level of protection that's required to reach herd immunity. So herd immunity is off the cards in the short term. And it really is something that, you know, is not going to be achieved at least until next year.
Thank you very much, Professor Kingston Mills from Trinity College Dublin.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.